This is November the 15th, 2003, and I'm talking with Wesley Tall to clear up some of the things on his interview. Wesley, could you tell us about Crystal Plunge and how it was built and why it failed?
And what happened to them when the boys got electrocuted?
Yes.
Well, they were cleaning the pond out. They were cleaning that pond out, and there was a wire loose in there, and there were three men in there. And one of them got out. Now, I think it might have been, I just don't know for sure. But Dahl was going to marry Bill Condon's daughter, Marjorie. And they were practically engaged to be married. And he got killed there, but there were three in there, and there's one of them got out of there, and he didn't get electrocuted, but it's the other two did.
The other two did. Now, the Crystal Plunge was built on your grandmother's property?
Yeah, and that was a homestead.
By Garrett Tall?
Well, that been Wynonda Tall, the mother. Now, you look on your internet at the Tall's back, and you'll see Wynonda's name in there.
And they built it as a private enterprise.
Right.
And then after the two fellows were electrocuted, it just closed.
Well, the reason they closed it, because they didn't have no way of getting their water out when they washed the pond out. They run it out there and let sunk in the ground. Then, you see, then they got that artesian well over there. Both of them was put in, I think the two of them.
Yeah, that was at the city shops across from the
right
overpass there.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And heck, man, we lived there in the old house. Oh, heck, fire, that was 26, 27. And we moved back to the ranch in 28.
Uh-huh.
And that was the deal. We built the thing, and it was a going thing at the time. But then everything just seemed to fall to pieces. When they got electrocuted, they went out, and then they couldn't run it anymore because they couldn't get hooked to the sewer.
Uh-huh.
And they was draining that pond out. So that's the reason that I knew of it. But I couldn't tell you what date it moved in there.
But that was the reasons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There was another question here. Is you mentioned the experimental range. Could you tell us what the experimental range was and what they intended to do there?
Well, what they intended to do, that was supposed to have been a 10-year job. They went in and fenced that out. And they had allotments in there when the cattle used to run in there. When we used to haul them over on the other side, and them cattle would all get right there on Bear Creek, and we had enough time getting through. But that was their idea, was to get them cattle and the deer and the elk, and they wanted to see how they got along together as animals is all I could ever. And they had that for 10 years. And you've probably seen in the paper here not long ago, it mentioned the fact about that they might have to tear up all that fencing on one thing or another, and I never heard any more about it.
But it was to learn about the habitat and getting along and grazing.
And now they too also, they figure they got sand of timber, full growth.
Uh-huh.
Well, John, I haul logs off every damn bit of it.
So it had been cut before.
Yes, it had been cut before.
Well, you mentioned Camel Springs, and I had worked putting a pipeline up the experimental. Well, that was water for the cabins and things were up there for the experimental station.
Okay. And about that time, I was working right in what they called the horse pasture below Camel Spring, all of that down along by Meadowbrook.
Uh-huh.
And we logged that in there. And I was only about 17 years old when they logged that out.
Yeah.
And I was working there and hooking. And that's where I started driving trucks. And the boys felt sorry for me. I was just a young punk, you know. And the sweat was just rolling off me. And it was in July. And the truck drivers come up and they had, I think, 5 trucks running. And one of them said, well, take my truck down and I'll hook around. And pretty soon another one come and he say, take my truck down and I'll hook around. And then pretty soon it got to the point where one of the boys was going to leave. Lawrence Matheny was the guy's name. And he told Tybo, he said, if you'll promise that you'll give Wes my truck, I will stay 2 weeks longer. And he says, if you'll guarantee to give him that truck. And I got it. So that, from then on, I started hauling logs. But they was not union. So whenever we come to headquarters, they had a job. The married men drove the trucks, and I hooked on the loading rig. And that's when we went up Marley, and they fell all them trees across on Marley Creek, and they just laid in there, and what we could reach with the hooks, hooking, or we loaded it out.
And that's when you said it looked like a mill pond.
Yeah.
You mentioned that the truck's not having defrosters, and you put a limb underneath the back of the hood.
Right.
That was to let the heat melt the frost that accumulated on the windshield so that you could see coming out of there. And sometimes it was a very small area that you could see, and it made it very difficult in driving the trucks during the winter.
And that's like these rearview mirrors. You know damn well, John, we couldn't see them now anyway. And they had them on there, on them trucks. They only stuck out about that far on each side. They only had one. And you take a 9-foot bunk.
That stuck out farther than the mirror.
Yeah, that was 8 foot is what is normal, you know. And they went on out to a 9-foot bunk. That's what we had on them. So there was no way of you looking back. You might get a mirror to see how your load looked. But if you had them way out there, you sure as hell couldn't back up to the loading rig that way. And when the trailer was loaded up on, you turned around and you looked in between the trailer. And that's where you backed to the goddamn loader. Well, once in a while, Elmer Falk would put his car out there. And I told him one time, I said, you're kind of foolish, boy. I said, parking that out there, because when we back in, we might wipe her right off the road.
You mentioned here that a Gippo loaded by 1,000 feet, and you figured, I'm not sure how you figured the footage on there. That was the number of board feet in
each
a log.
Each log. And that was scaled and put onto the car, and then it comes to the mill.
When you say scaled, somebody had a measurement there.
A regular scaling rule.
A scaling rule that you were able to determine how many board feet that log would produce.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And they had that. They had every log scaled onto them cars, and that's what we got paid by, the scale. And they gippled that. There was the brakeman and the conductor was the hookers on that outfit. The fireman and the engineer. The engineer took care of the train when we were spotting to load these cars.
Yeah.
He stayed right on the engine, and he had him a marker. So you put him right on the end. And when we was working in them decks, We wanted to work them decks out as far, as fast as we could on the back end. In other words, when we started loading, we didn't just load right on down through the whole thing. We started concentrating on that deck out on the end.
You worked
all
as a
we
unit.
Could get to get them out, yeah. Get all them logs out, you know. Well, then you didn't have much problem. You spot back and forth. And
you mentioned about the mud and the ice when the deck was frozen.
Well, what has happened in the fall of the year when there was a skidding and lots of rain, you know, and mud, they'd go on them logs. Then they'd load them on the trucks. They'd go down and unload them, and then they'd deck them. Well, then when we went in and broke them decks, a lot of that there with the rain would go down in there. Some of these decks would hang out just like that, way out at the top. And we was hooking down here off of the bottom. So what we'd do
was pretty dangerous.
Well, I hope
if
that
one of those logs would break loose.
You didn't want to run towards the goddamn the loader. You wanted to go back through. But if you didn't, you'd get cut in two.
Yeah.
But what happened when that mud was in there, and then it rained, and the snow come on them, and that snow was up on them, and we was loading them. And what we'd do, we'd pick out, and they wouldn't break down. They had an old powder monkey, D. Perry. He'd come along, and he'd have a half a stick of powder dynamite, and he'd crawl up in there where them was hanging over like that, with a fuse, and he'd shoot.
And
shake them logs, and they'd come down. Now, if he couldn't get them, we'd get a hold of a pretty good-sized log. We'd pick it up the loader. We'd bring it over here like this, and we'd
swing it
right up in there. And then, oh God, when they come down here, we'd hook ropes down into it and the hooks, and it was quite a job getting them out, but we had the log down where we wanted them. And then when we was on a long haul like that on the back end of them decks, you know, that was a long chore back to hook them logs. They wasn't right up to the track. So when we'd hook one, we'd look back in and we'd hook a fair sized one. We had some little ones, so we keep working them suckers toward the car, you know, so they'd be a little shorter to us.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'd load over 1,000 logs in a train load.
Uh-huh.
One time I think it was 1,034 logs we loaded. That's a lot of logs.
You mentioned here that it was a pretty good life. What did you mean by that? That you had a good job and
we got paid real good for it. We got paid so much $1,000, and it was split four ways: the engineer, the fireman, the conductor. The brakeman and the conductor. And when they started loading, the engineer, he took care of the engine. I goes back and fires up the loader. And the two brakemen and conductor done the hooking. And then we'd had a whistle on that. We'd have two ahead, three back. And that's the way we worked our decks out.
Uh-huh.
We got out on the end, and we just kept getting all the logs we could get. And the loads kept building up between you and the engine. Sometime we'd go in there and load 14 out by noon. And so what I'd say, when we was back a loading, these loads that we loaded out, of course the jammer just kept a slipping back over them. And when between us, and when we got done, the jammer was right on the end of the goddamn car.
What was the jammer?
Well, it was an upright board or steam outfit. I can't exactly tell you what the name of it is, but one of them old loaders right down there around Dowa, where the railroad track goes up to Lostine and Joseph.
Uh-huh.
And it goes out of Elgin, goes down across the river, and right there is where Wallow and the Grand Round come together.
Uh-huh.
And just up along that track, if they never ever went in and got it, one of them old loaders set there. But I don't. But I think if they called it a Clyde, I'm not sure. So I wouldn't want you to say that that was what it was. But it was what it was. It had steel runners under it. On the back end, we had regular wraps up like that. Because when you skin back through your cars, the chains is laid out like that. When them runners hit it, the chains in the bunk, when you run over them with the, your bottom part of it, the sled, just like a sled, what it was. And when you pull back, you'd go back over there, and of course them would come up. And we had them laid out about 45 degrees. And then when you loaded, you had what they call a fate. And it was about that wide and about that long, and it had a hook on it. And I had a T on this end of it, and you slipped that in there and went over the pin of the stake. You could throw your stake in, and your stakes never went clear down because that held it. So when you went to load, you put a log over.
It kind of had an arm that went out there that helped lift it, kind of.
Lift what?
The logs.
Oh, they had the loader, they had boom on it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they had a big long boom on it, and we'd get centered, we'd whistle ahead, you know, to a deck and stop when we was in line to load, and that way you picked them right up and you put them on.
And then
you didn't reach way over here and pull one back like that, because when you spotted down, and that's why they always whistled ahead or back. Well, this engineer would mark when we'd put him right on the end with the empties. We'd go right out to the end of the track, and he'd get him a big glimmer of rock, and he'd put right down with the step of the engine, where he'd come up and down, and he set there. Okay, we'd load out an end, maybe two or three cars. We'd spot him down, and if he was right on her, he'd give a three whistle and he'd go the other way, because he didn't want to push him out over the end of the track. And that's what the deal was.
Okay. Well, that explains.
And then what we had to do, John, we had to keep working them decks out, because if you didn't, you'd have to go in there one car at a time to load them. See what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You had all these empties, and we went back, the loader skinned right back over them. You'd load an end, and skim back and load another end, and then we had a tail line, and we went out and we threw it over the end, haul back line, and on the side we had a deal there, because if we loaded on a curve, you wouldn't want the line over the end of the goddamn deal. When you pull that loader back, you had to keep it guided on, so they just throw that over, and that's what's called a sidewash. Your line run through that, and that kept your loader going square back over the car. If you was in a circle, and the loader is here, and your line is out there, it cut right across the corner. See what I'm talking about? So they take that sidewash and throw over, and put the line in the middle of the car. So the loader, when you send her back, it stay on the car.
Well, you mentioned one time that you were going to shoot a spike elk, and here you said that I had the old engine set right, and she was right up to the top, and I had both injectors wide open. What did you mean by that?
Well, them injectors, see, when you was using so much steam of pulling out of there with them loads, you had to put more water in it, because that steam, when it goes out, it's got moisture in it. And you had to keep them boilers up. So we had to have both of them running in order to get one out on the main line down to Hillguard. Why, we just used the one injector.
Yeah.
but coming out of there, you're using so much steam. And that's what we always done too. When we started out of there, we had 14 loads. That's the most that old one had ever water with, and that was a load.
And that and was the one spot that you're talking about.
Right.
That was the engine.
And then we'd take seven. We'd run around and put seven ahead of us. We had seven behind us. And when we were pulling out of there on them hard pulls, if we couldn't holler, if she'd stall out, we never had to, but we could shove seven up to a little flatter and back down and get the other seven and go on out. If we didn't, we wouldn't have water enough. And I don't know how many thousand gallons. There's quite a bit of water on that thing.
And it said you said that we had electric saws. And they had these little caterpillars on a running board, and they had a generator on them. And on one side, it had a regular saddle. What do you mean?
Well, the saddle where you put your, you can put your saw up on there and haul it.
Oh, uh-huh. And haul it on the
You go to another tree.
Uh-huh.
You see, we didn't pack them. And it was a two-man saw. You had to have two men on them. One man couldn't handle them. And he went on the one end and one on the electric end. And say, when that was rainy weather, you used to get some pretty good little bites out of that, too.
It said here with electric saw that it cut a wide gash, and you had to knock it out with a Pulaski. A Pulaski was a tool that had a sharp end on it that you could...
Yeah, slot on one end and an axe would come up. It was just like a chisel. And then you had your axe. And when they'd go in with that saw, they'd cut in three notches like that on the side you was falling it to, the undercut.
And
then they took the Pulaski, and you chopped them right out with that chisel, and they just come out in chunks.
And then what they would do, that would help form a hinge so that the tree fell in the direction that you wanted it to fall in.
Yes, and the reason for that is the safety. If you don't, the tree would go over, John, and the sucker would split up about 6, 8, 10 feet and probably come right back at you when it went off the stump. So when you put that undercut in there, when the tree starts to fall, it ain't riding on that stump. And if you didn't put the undercut in it, it split up your tree.
And that was called a what?
The undercut's what you put in there.
Well, I mean, when that piece was left sometimes, didn't they have a name for that?
Oh, on the stump shot?
Yeah.
Well, when they fall it, sometimes it would be not that much difference. It might be a little bit higher than where your undercut was. A lot of times it had whacked out off and they'd leave it lay. You've probably seen them lay. Well, that's what they do. They'd true up the end of it. And see, when they put them logs out, they was 31 feet. No, they was 33 feet is what the logs was. A long log was 32. That made 2 16-foot timbers or whatever you wanted. They were 33 feet long. It give about 6 inches or maybe better on account of where your hooks went in and picked them up and one thing or another.
Then you had to be careful the way you fell them so that they didn't break.
Well, what was happening too with this power saw, this big power saw, when you put the undercut in it, you had to go around the back side and a gash into it about that far, John. If you put a wedge in there, the wedge would have to be awful thick because the size of the tree, you put the undercut in and you start cutting in, and you put your wedge in with that big a crack, it has to have an awful thick wedge to lift a tree. And besides that, you go right on your chain. If you had a long, thin one, that would be right into your chain. You see what I mean there, don't you?
Yeah.
That's what I told Wayne.
Following the trees.
That's what I told Wayne one time. Him and I was out there cutting wood, and I told him, I said, Wayne, I said, on them undercuts, when you put them in, I said, if you want to pull a tree to swing it, I said, don't go in so awful deep on your undercut. Then you can get in with your saw, then you can put a wedge in, and you can lift it.
Lift it up
and fall
in the direction.
See what I mean?
Yes.
But with that power saw, it had such a big gash, that a big thick wedge, you know what had happened there. You hit it and the son of a gun would bounce out like it wouldn't go in.
Yeah.
And you couldn't have a thin one, because you'd go up again your chain and tear your chain off. That was the reason for that. And what I told you too, that they got to the point, whichever way the tree was leaning. If it was leaning downhill, that's where she went. And that's what stopped it, because a lot of them logs fell down that hill. You know, they hit with an awful pressure, and it'd break them. It'd break in pieces, you know.
And you'd lose
and
you water.
Lose your, you'd lose your amount of stumpage, or I mean, scale.
Your
or what
scale.
And they always scaled. When they scaled, they always scaled the little end of the log.
You mentioned too about the spurs.
The spur tracks?
Well, I worked on, there was quite a lot of steel over the hill and a lot of spurs. Well, you're talking about the train track.
Right.
Okay.
When they're
Excuse
picking
me,
up
I,
the, when there's a hole in the track, I'll turn it up. That's
so
what I meant.
You went into areas sometimes and they put track down so that the train could go in there, and then when that was logged out, you pulled up the track so that they could put it into another area.
Now what we done, we never did do that because we had all this track, and I don't know, we had about 50 some odd miles of track. See, we had a one running up into the river camp. And we had one going clear over the hill. And what happened there when they loaded them out, they had a big loading ramp. And you put it right at the end of one of them empty cars, and you chained it. You took the knuckle out, took the pin out, and tied them right tight together. And this ramp had run out like that, just like you're going to load a caterpillar. The ramp road on the outside of the rail, both sides. And the bottom of that ramp where it went down on the track, it was up about that high. And when they go out to the end, they took them rails and they pulled them with the spike mauls, and they put it up over this roll. So when we started, we just moved the engine down 7 rail lengths. And when we were pulling that, the rails was going up over and the ties were down. And the little nails were just popping out of them. So you didn't have to pull it.
Uh-huh.
Now then I mentioned about the spurs.
Uh-huh.
They were so short, they couldn't go in there and do that, get a car in there for say the rail was about 100 yards or 50 yards long. Just a little old shoe fly rail in there. And that's what I told you about when we got into the camp. That old guy from Chicago, when they picked up that steel, He told me one time, he's coming off the hill, and he said, "Boy," he said, "I hate to get into that camp." He said, "All them little tracks running out, see, one where the cookhouse was, and you've seen them running out." And then we had a place where we went in with the engine, and we had a tank sitting in there to get crude oil in it. And we had passing tracks or runaround tracks. One out here like that and one like that. You line the switch and you run around and hook onto the other end, and that's where you had to do it. So that's probably where you was kind of mistaken on.
Well, then I wasn't real sure what you were talking about.
Well, now, and then this old guy from Chicago, he kept talking, and I said, "Well, hell," I said, "don't worry about that." I said, "them short spurs in there in the main camp," and then they had another camp up in Bear Creek, had the same thing. I said, "when we get down to them," I said,
"you told the gentleman from Chicago that you could handle that by..."
"With the loader."
Uh-huh.
I told him, like, I said, "I can load all of that stuff out in one evening." Boy, when we got loaded out, that old boy, he was tickled. He said, "and we just take them rails." We had a pair of tongs that went right down over, and we picked them right in the center. I just pick them up and slap them up onto the car.
So they were able to pull the rails?
Yeah, well, you slip them up and put them on there, and then you get the rest. And you work down through off the main line and load them rails out, see, to the main line, because you have your loader and one thing or another on a railroad car, so.
Yeah. You mentioned one time that they come up and demonstrated some diesels, but
they didn't bring the diesel.
Oh.
They came up. These boys come up and they wanted to check the track out, and so they went over the hill with us, and then they asked us when we was going to get in the hard haul. You know, we'd be coming out and you go around the curve. And some of that, boy, would just pull you right down, and we'd have all the power we had to get up around there. Hell, that old guy, he'd just step off of her and walk right alongside of the engine, looking and watching one thing and another. And that's what I was telling you. And then when they got up on top, he said, "they can't run a diesel on that track."
Uh-huh.
That light steel and the curves that we went around, of course, that old engine, all them U-joints along the side of them, you know what I'm talking about. You know, you have the U-joints on your driveline in the car. That front truck, there's the U-joint, and you come on down, and them...
It has to flex.
They bent this way, see?
Yeah.
So that's why we can... That old engine, they'd go around them curves like that way.
It had to flex so that it'd go around the curve.
Well, your driveline is...
I better understand it.
So that was the reason for it.
Now, there was one thing we were talking about up at Anthony Lake and the way they treated you up there. They told you to go out on the job, that they would bring you the food, but they didn't.
On the fire.
On the fire at Anthony Lake.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned that after you'd been up there 2 days, you lost the final drive.
Steering friction.
And what is final drive?
The final drive is the one that it runs all the gears, but this was the steering friction. And that throws you out on one track, or you pull this and it throws it out.
So
and when you want to turn.
So you can turn.
You turn, you lock one track, and this track will pull around it. You pull this and the track will run the other way. This track will run around that.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only way you had steering them.
And when you lost that, you went around the circle. There wasn't any way.
Well, the only way I could do is back up.
Yeah.
Use one track and get straight, and then go.
Uh-huh.
And when it's going the wrong way for me, I'd have to turn it around and get it straight again and have both of them pulling.
And you mentioned that a piston was out on the other, and that was in the engine, so you couldn't run the engine.
Well, that was on the other eight. There was two eights. We both in there, and the final drive went out. That's where you got your idea.
Uh-huh.
The final drive broke on that, so one side wouldn't pull on that side. That sprocket, or your track run up over, that's your final drive, and that was broke. It was only pulled by one track.
So actually, the piece of equipment was useless.
Well, yes.
And
then the other one, they had these here on your like you have on your carburetor. You got a deal there for dust.
Air cleaner.
Air cleaner. There you go. Them air cleaners on this one had a hole in it. And when he was working up there on that fire, pushing stumps and stuff out of the way and making a fire trail, fire guard is sucking this stuff through, and this air cleaner had a hole in it and went in and knocked out one piston.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened to that one.
When dust gets in there, it's very abrasive.
Well, yeah. That was odd too. When we come out, I had a big toe strap on the back, and I was back to back. That engine could pull. I could pull two with one track. But we was tied together. I come out backwards, and he went out forward
mm-hmm.
with his cat. And around the side hill, I couldn't keep, and he'd have to pull me. On flat ground, I could pull a little bit with one track.
Yeah.
So when we got out there, I think we had them right up tight together. We broke that strap so many times of coming out of pulling, you know. I didn't have much of a toe strap when I got out.
And you mentioned one of the last roads that you built was up Glass Hill.
Yeah, coming down off Glass Hill, and it come out right where Smoot's barn is. You know where that power outfit moved in there?
Well, Glass Hill is off of Ladd Canyon up here, south of La Grande, and I don't think they knew exactly where Glass
Hill
was.
Wait a minute, it wasn't in Ladd Canyon.
Well, not, but
it was up by Morgan Lake. And you went out, and you got clear out on top, and we come down through. I think there was about three switchbacks had to build in, and we come out at the viewpoint out there at the marsh.
Above Dick Smoot's farm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is the Game Commission has now.
Yeah, they did. They finally got that, I think.
Yeah.
I believe they did, anyway. But they didn't have that then. We come down that one ranch there, you know, you drive right by, that's got the emus.
That's D. Smoot's. It's got the emu birds up there.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. And then Dick's was beyond that.
Simonis has got Dick's.
Well,
I thought.
Well, there was a part of that the Game Commission has. You know where the barn was there?
You're right.
Simonis is just beyond
right.
that.
But we come down, and then we made a switchback as far as we went to the game. Then we come back along where Smoot done the feeding,
uh-huh.
all of that in there. And then I come out over there where they put that big, I don't know what it is. I guess it's the fuel line, ain't it? The oil line.
It's the natural the gas pipeline, isn't it? El Paso Natural Gas.
Well, I could be. But then they went in and they put another line through, and that's when they built all of that. Remember, where the pipeline is, you go up here on 12th Street, go right on out.
Mm-hmm.
There's where their setup is on that. And you ever been up there?
Yeah.
It's on the right before you come to the end of the road. It ain't the end of the road if you get to the gate or you go out on the old road.
Yeah.
So.
Another story that you told me was that I thought was quite interesting is when the bootlegger stopped by the ranch because he had a broken tire.
Flat tire.
Can you tell us, and your brother Don, what happened to him?
Well, it was Irish Stiles who it was. He come down and they was bootlegging up there, and he had a Chevrolet coupe. And he had these drums in the back end of it full of liquor. So he got down there and he had a flat tire. So he pulled into the grove, you know, where he's going up to, or Talbot lives.
Uh-huh.
And he just pulled in there. And of course, old Don and I, we knew Irie well. And of course, we just kids. So by gosh, we finally took an old Nash. We had a Nash, a 30 Nash. And it had a wooden wheel, and then the rim went on, and it had lug bolts to hold it on. Well, his Chevrolet was the same thing. So we gave him a tire off of that so he could go on into the ground. So old Don, he told him, he said, well, God, he said, wouldn't you give a man a drink? Oh, well, Larry said, yeah. He said, just have right at her. I've seen people drunk. I thought he was going to die, sure as heck. His face broke out, infantigo all over his face.
Don took a real big drink.
Yeah. Well, he got all that fusel oil.
Oh.
See, out of that keg when he... do gasoline the same way. If you're siphoning gas and you take it down there and it ain't into the gas and you take a big swig of that and you get it in your lungs, man, you got the cheapest drunk you ever crawled on.
Oh boy.
Well, so that's what happened there. He got all that fusel oil in there and boy, he was drunk. I'll tell you, he was terrible.
You also told me that when you were kids that you used to go down on the river that run by the your farm there and over toward Condon's place, and you used to use powder to blow the fish out of the holes.
Well, what it was, John, they had an awful, awful big run of suckers.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's where we went, and so when we come back, we had a lot of powder there anyway. We were shooting stumps and one thing or another. So we goes down and we hit some holes or the like that, and we'd put the about a half stick. Two or three of us get down there on the river, down in the big wide bar, you know, where the riffle went across. And then fish come down. We'd throw them out on the bank. Talk about a stinky mess. And you know it, we only got one good trout out of that whole business.
Is that right?
We got one real nice trout. But what we were trying to do was to get rid of the suckers.
Oh.
And they used to run up in by camp. Them kids up there to camp, Normal probably tell you, that them kids go out there with three-prong hooks and a heavy weight, and they'd throw out and they'd reef it into them fish and catch them out.
These were the suckers.
Right, and there was nothing but suckers out. They'd run and they'd fall in, I think they'd fall in a steelhead, eating them steelhead eggs.
Or the salmon.
Well, I imagine.
Yeah.
I never seen too much salmon, only jack salmon
uh-huh.
up there. I never did
yeah.
seen chinooks or anything like that.
Yeah.
There's always what you call a jack salmon. So.
Well, when you, you farmed up there at the ranch, just above the Condit place. Your dad would go down and help Mr. Condon was his brother-in-law, and Mr. Rankin would help.
George Rankin.
And your sister Frederica gave me some pictures of them working out there in the meadow there where that Kuna place is.
Yeah, well, we helped. We trade work back and forth, and we only had one separator, thrash machine. And what you do when we worked on that, we'd go help Barnes's lived there then. We'd help them do thrashing, and if my dad had a pretty good patch of oats, they'd come up and they'd thrash that. Old George Rankins, he was over the hill, and he was over on Jordan Creek, and they'd go over, pull that up over there and do his thrashing for him. And that's what kind of tickled me one time. Don and I, what you did, they didn't have the deal that goes out and you can throw your bundles on and carry it up and into the thrasher. All they had was just a couple of platform out like that, and right here where you went right into the conveyor where they put the wheat in. And old Don and I, we used to get powder boxes, and we'd stand on each side, and when they'd throw the bundles off, we had a handle about that long that had us cut back in and a sickle on the mowing machine. We had that, and when they'd throw that bundle on, we'd slash the band. And then the guy was feeding it, he'd reach over, he'd grab that, and he'd roll it in, and roll that in then, and that skid would stay right on that sucker and slice them bands. When we went over to old Rankin's over there, he paid us the same as the weller we was entitled to it.
Yeah.
By golly, he said, and he paid us skids off.
Same
and
as
my
you
dad
and me.
Said, you don't have to do that. And he said, I don't have to do that, but he said, them boys done just as hard to work as the rest of them. So he paid us off, by golly.
He was a very fair man.
Yes, he was.
I guess.
I used to like old George. I'd go over and visit with him quite a bit. In fact, he'd give me a fishing pole and an old reel and a basket. I used to go over there and I'd get his outfit and I'd go up the creek and catch a bunch of fish. And we went there one time. He wanted me to stay for dinner. And up on top of his warming oven, you know them old wood stove? It was a regular teapot, that's what it was. It had a lid on it, crock. And I looked at that sucker, and that's where he had his sourdough. He didn't know what you wanted to do there.
You said you accidentally cut your dog's leg off. Out there.
Oh, that's out of Garrett. That was out of Garrett's.
Oh, that was when you worked at Garrett Tall.
Well, we was out there. My dad went out there and run that. We left the ranch. We moved into Hillgard. And the kids went to school there, and I wasn't old enough. And we went out there, and we had that in there where Shaw's got up on the upper end. That was all the Garrett Tall place. And that was a mowing. You go out with the old Fruitdale School, go out to Spruce, and you can look up and see them rock bluffs there right up on top. I was a mowing up there in this alfalfa, and I was a mowing around. I had the old shepherd dog was with me, and a bunch of little young chinks.
Pheasants.
They all loomed up, and that dog run in, and I had a stallion for one horse, and then a mare with him. That's what my team was. And I hollered, whoa, and that damn stallion, he'd always, when you say whoa and try to stop him, he'd always have to take three, four more steps, and then that dog bailed in front of that sickle bar and whacked his leg right off. Jeez, I felt bad about that.
Sure you did.
Well, yeah, he seen them pheasants, see, and I was a-mowing, cutting the hay down. he just bailed right in front of that sickle, and I tried to get him to stop, but...
Which leg did it cut off?
Hind leg.
Hind leg.
Just between, well, just up above the foot away, cut off. Not that far up.
About 6 inches up.
Yeah. That old dog, you know, there wasn't a saddle horse on our ranch, and we had some pretty damn fast stuff. We used to go up to Stark, you know, and they had them rodeos.
Uh-huh.
Us kids would go in and we'd race our horses, you know, and get in there. And we had some pretty fast stuff. And I've seen the time that little old white mare we had, I'd be running her just as fast as she could go, and that goddamn old dog is right out here in the tall grass. And lots of times he'd go up like that, and he'd come up with a red squirrel. That's no kidding. He'd pick up a squirrel running. But boy, I'll tell you, he could run right as fast as a horse. And you know, they always told me a coyote could run awful fast. And I went up out of school, and I went up to get the, rounded up the horses, and I went back there, and here was a pup coyote. And he just kept following along behind me, and finally I just turned around and I took out after him. That old horse's hoof was just a slapping one on his tail. He was running just as hard as he could go. No, that was out here.
Uh-huh. When you were in town?
Yeah. Yeah, my dad and I, we plowed that one time. And I couldn't go to school because I... What the heck was it? Oh, I jumped off of the wagon, high wagon seat, and the fork was down in the bottom.
Yeah.
I jumped off and went through and jabbed one right into my kneecap.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go to school when in the winter time, but there I was only about 7-8 years old.
Yeah.
Hell, we'd go out there and my dad would be a plowing. He'd be a plowing lead and I'd be plowing 3 horses behind. They'd come to the end of the line to turn. They'd turn, I'd have to watch myself or I'd fall off. That's why we done our plowing. Well, now, you know, they got Christ, what have they got? 10-12 plows on there when they go around.
Yeah.
They take a stretch around here as wide as my property here. They roll that all over one time.
Well, you went, your first year you went to school Fruit Dale, and then after that you went to Greenwood.
Well, what I done, I started at Fruit Dale,
uh-huh.
And I went a half a year, and then that's when the snow come in, just about like this. And out there where Bruce lived, that lane,
that's
was drifted
right here,
plumb full.
Yeah.
Well, they finally got it high enough that the snow goes across, but right in there where Bruce lived, yeah, it was terrible. The drifts got in there, hell, you go up over them with the sleigh like that, coming out of there. And that's the only way we come out of the sleigh.
Yeah. Through over the fence post.
Yep. That was pretty high. Well, my dad, when he bought that ranch up there, see, they bought the one that Condit had.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, two families living together, you know, didn't work too good.
Not too good.
So he bought the old place above. And my dad told me that he said in May, he said, you couldn't see a fence post.
That
and we sure don't get that snow anymore, do we?
Yeah. That was on the Grand Mound River up there.
Yeah, one time that... There was an ice jam come in right there with that motorcycle, you know, that run by me.
On that turn there by Jap Camp.
Okay, the bridge in there.
In Bird Track Springs.
Yeah, the ice jam come in again that bridge, and it went right down through by the house or by my dad's place, clear down to the Condit place, all of that, and some places out there, that water is out there deep enough you could swim a horse in it.
Hmm.
Hell, it just took the whole deal. And right there, just before you get to the Condit Ranch, from my dad's place going down, they used to have ties in there in the road. It's so soft. You could imagine what that would be. Going up over like that.
Like driving down with railroad tracks on in your car.
Well, the same way in that Marty Creek country up on Pickle. They had a road in there, and they had a tie mill. And they went in and cut ties out, and there was a lot of tamarack. They had a portable tie mill, and they had a belt run off an old 60 Caterpillar. And they used to take them tie slabs, and it was 8 foot, see. They'd lay in there, now maybe you think that wasn't a ride. And I used to drive up to there, and I had this foot right back under the seat to hold me in. Had an awful time keeping your trailer on, but you wangity wangity wang. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you did for entertainment was you started going with the travel trailer, going fishing on the coast.
Well, you know all about that.
Well, I do, but that was the thing you did for entertainment.
Yeah, we went fishing off while Eileen and I did. I'd come in from work. I'd have the trailer right out here, and she'd have it all loaded up, and out we'd go.
How many years do you figure you trailered?
How many years old is it?
Well, how many years have you been going out with your trailer?
I'd say, oh, gee whiz.
67.
Well, that's a 73 trailer. That's a 73 trailer.
Well, how many years before that? You had another trailer before that?
Oh, we had
that?
Another trailer, and we traded it in on this one.
Year
we didn't go much with that, did we, Eileen? Huh?
It was the year Shannon was born, so it was 67.
67.
So we went trailering quite a long time.
Been a lot of different places. Canada?
Oh, yeah, we went down on the coast.
Oxbow.
Over to UNDC and down on the Snake River.
Phillips Reservoir.
That was something.
Wallow Lake.
And we caught Wallow Lake. Hell, we used to go up to Wallow Lake. I went up there when I bought Old Leaky.
Mm-hmm. Old Leaky was your boat.
Anyway, when I bought it, I had it loaded on. Tuffy Prince had a fifth wheeler they picked up. I don't know where they got it. But we was up there, and so him and I went over to that. I can't remember the lake. It's over on Sheep Creek. You come out of Wallow Lake and you go to like, huh?
Kenny Lake.
Yeah.
So we goes over there fishing, and I had the boat loaded up on my rig. And it just kept going ahead. So that's when I put the ropes on it and tied her back. She don't go ahead no more. And that's what always bugged me too, when a bunch get around, if you're a little bit downhill, wouldn't that have been a hell of a mess that boat to run out over the hood?
Been a heck of a crash, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it would have. Well, you know, when you take your chains loose, take your tie downs loose, and you pull it back, and you unhook them, it ain't a cockeyed thing for it to go right out over there.
No.
That's what always kind of bugged me, be damn sure that she didn't go out over that direction.
And you spent a lot of years elk deer hunting?
Oh, yes. A lot of that. That was quite a bunch. One time we went out, I think of 4 or 5 bulls we had loaded on a flat rack. I went into camp, whole.
Boy.
And we had the guts out of them and cleaned them, you know, and laid them head one way and head the next way, and just crossed on that flat rack and went into camp.
That was a lot of time. That was your meals.
Yes, and we did not have no refrigeration.
So Eileen canned a lot of... Elk and deer meat.
Ever got any elk meat? Did you ever get any deer meat?
Yeah, lots of it.
You canned a lot of fish, too.
Yeah.
Well, we used to take a canner and put it under the bed. And you had the jars. Hell, we'd go to Diamond Lake, we'd catch a mess, and I'd go out and I'd clean them all up. She'd put the canner on, It was early enough in the spring that we could take the counter off and set it right in the goddamn snowbank. And that cooled her down.
I've eaten a lot of that fish that she canned. It was just like eating salmon. It was so good.
Yeah, because it didn't have any skin on it.
Well, we skinned them. Uh-huh. I skinned them, you know, that way.
Well, you're the one that taught me that they taste a lot better with the skin off.
Oh, now Betty likes them with skin on.
Is that right?
Said she liked them skin on.
I don't.
Well, you know, you could scrape and scrape and scrape and scrape on a fish, and if you got all that off, you were damn lucky, wasn't you?
True.
Now, with the, we used to scale our fish or a salmon. We used to take a hose with a real good nozzle on her, and you lay them babies down and work from the tail up.
Lift them just shingles on a roof.
Boy, I'll tell you, it just knocked them cockeyed scales right off of them. Did you ever do that?
No.
Be done.
I don't like the skin that well, so I still skin them like you told us to.
Yeah, then we used to take two, and I'd catch crab. We'd break them and take the shells off and clean them and put them in the pot, and they'd be alive.
Yeah.
Get them around there and get rid of them and bang them like that and crack that shell. And pull it off. Them was the good old days.
That's good old.
But these golden years are sure lovely, ain't they? You know about the golden years, don't you?
I think so.
That old loader, when we had it on the car and with the loading, and we had about that much snow on them,
on
them rails, on them rails, and them was rail bunks across, and they had pins in them and your stakes.